Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. My colleague, Gina Morrow, spoke with Monique Gary from Grandview Health about the challenges of addressing rising international cancer burden and inequity. The discussion followed a survey from the World Health Organization projecting more than 35 million new cancer cases in the year 2050. Gary discussed how primary care physicians and oncologists alike can mitigate this growing burden, which includes increasing screening access among younger people who present with cancer symptoms.
Obviously, very exciting report that came out about global cancer burden ahead of World Cancer Day last week. So a couple of things that I really just wanted to focus on here, and obviously it's, of course, very numbers heavy. So 2022 did see about 20 million new cancer cases and 9.7 million deaths. Of course, that's a staggering number. When you initially saw the report, what were some of your first thoughts? What did you think about all of this?
Wow. So my first thoughts in response to the WHO report was it was jaw-dropping. I mean, the numbers are high. When you talk about 20 million new cancer cases, despite all of our early detection campaigns, despite all of our health literacy work that we're doing, we're still seeing an increase. And it is concerning. I think, you know, I wondered if, and I don't know if I'm the best person to answer this, but I wonder how much of this is sort of the lag from COVID, right? Because we were on a roll and then all of a sudden we hit a global pandemic and we told everybody to shelter in place and stay at home. We know that screenings declined up to 97% for breast and cervical cancer and colon cancer as well. And now we're seeing this sort of uptick. And in the breast world, we are seeing a lot more advanced disease. And so I wonder how much of this is a little bit of that post-COVID effect. But I think irrespective of that, it shows that we've got to think about things a little bit differently because we're always just sort of one step behind and we're sounding the alarm globally. And when you look at reports, not just from the WHO, there was a recent one that came out of the UK as well. And, you know, they're showing that despite our best efforts, our precision oncology, our best medicine, our early detection, we're still seeing some challenges. So I think it's a clarion call to all of us to really make sure that all hands are on deck and we're thinking about solutions.
I think you put that very, very well. Also, three of the major cancer types seem to be the most prevalent that popped up last year, and that was lung cancer, breast cancer, and colorectal cancers. Does that surprise you at all? Does that track with what we've seen in prior years? What do you think?
I think it tracks with what we're seeing. And I think the other part of this is that we're seeing it more and more in younger people. We're seeing it in folks who don't have hereditary mutations, right? Like the incidence of lung cancer in folks who are non-smokers is astronomical. And so it really, again, it makes us question what we thought we knew about disease processes and about our screening for these things, because we typically screen folks who are at risk. You know, we screen folks who have a long history of smoking. We screen people who have high risk for breast cancer, and we enhance those screening mechanisms. But we're seeing something that doesn't fit into the box, and we've got to think outside the box a little bit, I believe.
I think that makes sense. And these three cancer types, there is screening for all of them. And so that does kind of bode well with your theory of that some of this could be a lag from COVID.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to look younger. You know, we're seeing younger and younger people. I just did a piece with the Wall Street Journal, younger folks with colon cancer. And so what are we doing, and what does it say about us as a society and as a world where younger people are getting these cancers, and what are some of the contributory things? And a few things pulled out, even from the World Economic Forum, from WHO, sedentary lifestyle, right? Obesity, stress, the impact of stress on our bodies, the impact of environmental concerns and pollution and poor air quality, poor water quality, you know? And I think there's some things definitely to that, in addition to heredity. But we need to look at all the causes and really tease out, because these three cancers are you know, I don't like to say they're preventable, but, you know, lung cancer can be preventable. Colon cancer, we know a lot about how to reduce the risk for colon cancer, and breast as well, but they continue to rise to the top.
Yeah, absolutely. There was also an interesting section on this report about the Human Development Index and linking that with cancer inequity. Can you expand on that?
So the Human Development Index, it's a summary of how a society is doing. What's the actual measure of achievement across a couple of different components of that society? So the health span, a long, healthy life, right? How are people doing with their standard of living, with their income, with their education? And so countries that have a higher Human Development Index, you would expect that they have a lower mortality from cancer. And I believe that we did see that in this report, right? What we saw was that women who, let's take breast, for instance, women who had were in countries with a very high HDI, 1 in 12 get diagnosed, 1 in 71 would die from that disease. But by contrast, those who were at a lower HDI, the incidence of cancer might be less, 1 in 27. But the incidence of mortality is twice that. It's 1 in 48. And so it really speaks to the fact that when you've got a society where 50% of the women are at higher risk of dying from a disease, we need to look at what's happening in those health systems and what's happening in that sort of global inequity. And I think what we're finding is that there's less access to not only early detection, but there is less access to actual treatment for their cancers, right? Lack of what's called financial protection. They can't afford the services. They can't access those life-saving services at just the basics of cancer care.
Something that really jumped out to me in the report, but looking at the predicted increase in cancer burden by 2050 was up like 77%. That's insane. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I think this might be an opportunity to maybe talk about some of those environmental factors that you mentioned. And if there's anything that both from a HCP perspective and even a patient perspective that we can be doing together to help reduce that burden.
So when I see the numbers, the projected numbers that over 35 million new cases by 2050. And it's not that far off, right? 77% increase in the number of cancer cases from 2022. It worries me. And it does, as you said, it makes me want to look not just at the treatment side of things, what can we do to help people live longer, but what's happening on the detection side and what are those factors? And I think globally, there are some huge risk factors. There are environmental exposures. We see things like microplastics in food, and this is a global problem where we've got a problem with our food source and with our water sources, with our soil. Tobacco, alcohol, obesity, again, those modifiable risk factors. And that to me is a great place to start, because the rising tide is going to float all boats, right? And so if we're able to help reduce the risk of not only cancer, but chronic illnesses through smoking cessation, right? Through movement, through our diet, those are our key ways that we can kind of help, I think, to decrease these numbers. And it helps people to feel empowered, because when you read a report like this, it can feel a little bit doom and gloom, a little disempowering. And I think I want folks to know and to feel galvanized from this report and feel inspired. Like, you know what? We got to pivot. We got to do something different. We need to look at, yes, what we're doing from a screening standpoint and making sure that we're screening the appropriate populations. We need to look at and call to the table our environmental stakeholders and see what can we do to not only measure but reduce the amount of environmental toxicities in places like Louisiana, in places like Western Pennsylvania, places, globally where the burden of environmental pollution is directly correlative to the cancer indices. But what can we do at an individual level and at a community level? How can we help people get fresher food, fresher air, get moving? Those are things that we can do at the primary level. And I hope that PCPs and those who are participating in community health would feel empowered by that.
My last question, I'm pretty sure kind of overlaps already, because you made a lot of really excellent points right here. But for the practicing oncologist right now, what do you think that, I guess, the most kind of like a key takeaway, how can they best contextualize all of these results for the patient that they have with cancer right now?
I think that practicing oncologists really need to do a couple things. And I'm going to speak not only from the oncology perspective, but also from the primary care perspective. And that first primary care perspective is that people are presenting with symptoms. Younger people are presenting with symptoms, and we cannot afford to dismiss them if they do have symptoms. Even in the absence of family history, I think we have to sort of redefine what we think cancer looks like, you know, and make sure that we're addressing the person in front of us and ruling out things like cancer in younger individuals, because the screening paradigm just hasn't caught up to that yet. It's not indicated for folks who are, you know, example, under the age of 40 or 35 for mammography, despite what we see in racial and ethnic disparities, where we might need to look at Black women, for example, getting screened at younger and younger ages. We need to look at breast density and find innovative technologies that will address things like breast density. If younger people are getting cancers, and we're using density-based modalities to find their cancers. So we need some innovation, but we have to, as clinicians, we have to recognize, right? So we cannot assume that tomorrow's cancer looks like today's. And I think we have to make sure that we're screening our population, that we're addressing what we see and not dismissing folks. And on the oncology side of things as well, I think we really have to lean into the research that's available and encourage patients to participate in clinical trials. Because in order to, actualize the promise of precision medicine and precision oncology, we need diversity. We need equity. We need inclusivity. We need belonging. And so I hope that oncologists are really taking that to heart and trying to figure out within their discipline, within their silo, what they can do to make sure that they're promoting research, to make sure that they're treating patients as equitably as possible with the cutting edge treatment that their disease deserves, and being involved in the movement to educate and promote health literacy. I think that we cannot expect somebody else to do it. It's not just the job of advocacy groups and societies. It's the job of every clinician. And, you know, this report says that all hands really need to be on deck to make sure that there's not misinformation and disinformation about cancer, about treatment, about diagnosis, about survival, and that we're doing it for every community. Because what I see from this report, most of all, that really it isn't quite explicitly stated, is that the individuals who have been disadvantaged already, those folks who have a higher mortality, those folks who are diagnosed at a later stage of disease, they're going to keep losing because they just don't have the resources and they don't have the access. And so this disparity is going to get wider and wider. We don't do something about it. And I think that should inspire everyone, because there is something for everyone to do.
So well said. Thank you so, so much. Is there anything else about this report that you really want people to know about?
I want people to, from this report and from the ACS, American Cancer Society report that just came out, and from the report in the UK, I want people to really hold industry accountable, hold our societies accountable, because I think that we can no longer continue to operate with the status quo and just the standard of care. We need to be pushing the envelope, because these numbers, as we see, they're going to double in just a few short years if we don't do something different. So if we're continuing to do the same things the way we've done them, and I mean this from a guideline standpoint, if our guidelines never catch up, and if we always say, you know, as unfortunately U.S. Preventive Task Force says, there's insufficient evidence to suggest that, you know, women with dense breasts should benefit from supplemental imaging. There's insufficient evidence to say that we should screen African-American women younger. Well, we're always looking backwards to inform future research. But I want us to hold these societies and hold those who are in positions to bring these stakeholders to the table, hold us accountable, because we need to do something innovative, we need to do something quick, and we need to do something creative and collaborative to really see change in our lifetime. And I think it's possible.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.